What up, guys? It's your boy, Tiny Sumo, coming to you live from the mobile studio. As you can see, we're in the car again. Why? Because I tried it a second ago in the conference room, and the internet didn't really want to work for me. But we improvise, we adapt, we overcome, we get the daily feed out to the people. Why? I got a guest on today, so we'll get down with it in a minute, and the internet's going to work this time. I can feel it. I'm going to be fine. It's going to be all right. As always, let me get my plugs out the way. So go to dirtycleanates.com, check out the product there. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, and use code DCE Tiny Sumo for 10% off with those guys. And their podcast, DCE Pirate Radio Podcast, is on iTunes now. And go to fingertape.com.au, check out the product there, and use the code Tiny Sumo with those guys for 10% off as well. Oh no, your Wi-Fi. Oh. We're going to try anyway, Barry. We're going to try anyway, and we'll see how we go. I'm going to go live with my guest in a second. He's just giving me the worrisome...
Why? We'll soon find out.
Nice jacket. I try and stay highly visible, babe. I need the fans to be able to see me. Oh, Barry, here we go. How are we? Ooh, is it my internet or is it yours? Oh, I hear you, but you sound like a robot. I worry that it's... in and out, cutting in and out. Oh, he's left. He's going to do something. I don't know, he's going somewhere else. I'm hoping that he's going to find some other internets. Some other receptions. We'll see how we go. Barry doesn't know this, but I have magazine clippings from some of his articles out of Fight magazines still to this day in my house. So it'll be very cool if I can get down and have a chat with him. And I'm hoping that the internet gods come to the party and make it happen. We'll see. Because otherwise people are stuck with my face. People get tired of that. Understandably so. Here we go.
How's that?
Are we better? Aye, there we go. Now we're rocking. Beautiful. Yeah, we got there in the end.
That was my Wi-Fi, mate, so I apologise for that. I've had to come upstairs and go on the old...
All good.
4G.
That's all right. That's fine. Like I said, well, I'm currently out in the mobile studio. I'm out in the Corolla, mate. I'm in the car park, so... But we're making it happen. Barry, thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat. I appreciate you coming on all the way from the UK. I don't know how the weather is over there, but it's cold here right now.
I see. I'm not buying that. Your cold is totally, totally different to our cold.
I don't know. I'm out here in the fleece jacket. I'm trying to stay warm. Yeah. In the car.
No, it's grey and miserable as usual here, mate.
Oh, well, the sun was out earlier, so I don't feel so bad now. That's all right. I can live with that. Barry, I really do appreciate you coming on. I don't know if you heard a second ago. But I was mentioning to the people that were watching that I have magazine clippings. I've got pages cut out of Fight magazines from your strength and conditioning articles still sitting on the shelf at home now. A lot of the strength and conditioning stuff that I was doing for myself, especially before I knew what strength and conditioning was stolen out of those magazines and out of your articles. So thank you for that, first up.
No, thank you, mate. You must be the one person that read them then.
My brother read them too. We shared the magazines. So there you go. There's two at least.
Yeah, excellent.
All right. So for the people watching and listening, can I get a little bit of a background about yourself? Because I'm interested to find out yourself, strength and conditioning coach, but also a Sambo practitioner. How did you get started in combat sports?
Well, my dad's a judo player. My dad's done judo for ever, as long as I can remember. And obviously that was just a progression. I started in judo at six. And that kind of followed through all my life, really. And it's accountable for most of my injuries, to be fair. I went through a bit of a Bruce Lee phase, in my teens, and I did a bit of Kung Fu and stuff. But grappling and judo was always kind of there in the background because it was part of family life, really, you know? And then I got into Sambo, early 2000s through a judo friend, funny enough, and did my first two or three competitions then, but then got married, had kids, dropped out of competition and stuff, and But I've been around combat sports all my life, really. You know, I mean, I'm 44 coming up. So it's a long time in them, you know.
Because that's always been one of the things that interests me. We don't have a massive Sambo community in Australia, and I wish we did have more of it. But that's always been one of the things I've been interested in finding out about, you know, especially someone like yourself. You said that the judo led into it. You know, the judo was there first. Yeah. You found the Sambo later on. In terms of, like, from a training perspective, for yourself personally, you know, is there much difference? Do you find much difference between the two?
No, I mean, there's two branches to Sambo. There's sports Sambo, which is just like old style judo before, like, the rule changes. Because I don't know if you know about the rule change, whether
the leg grabs.
So it was pretty much like that, like old style judo. So the crossover into sports Sambo was quite straightforward. But I also dabbled with a bit of combat Sambo for about 3 or 4 years and competed in that as well, which previous striking helped. And obviously some of the boxers I used to do strength and conditioning with, they helped. And it was just a case of adding the striking into kind of what I would class as my style of judo, really, I suppose. And then mishmash it with a bit of Sambo as well. Do you know what I mean? It didn't take much adapting to cross over, if I'm honest.
Okay, so then was it just, I mean, obviously, because I've dabbled with some judo as well, but from, like, the submission aspects, you know, did you find there was much of a learning curve in terms of stuff like the lower, you know, the lower limb submissions, anything like that, or were you...
The leg locks were a definite eye-opener, obviously, because they're not in judo at all. So that was different, you know, and it's a very... A lot of people used to say, "Oh, it's no different from an armbar or a, you know, a kimura," and it's like, "Well, yeah, it is. It's a lot different. It's, you know, somebody's leg doesn't move as easy as their arm, you know." And I used to think, like, people always seem to find, like, it's easy to turn my legs into pretzels as opposed to me turning other people's legs into pretzels. You know, I always found that really hard. But I'm getting there with it, and it's just drilling. It's like anything. It's like any skill. But like anything, even with judo and Sambo and everything else, I'm still learning. So I think once you've kind of become closed to learning, then you might as well pack in altogether, you know? So it was difficult, but obviously that's just one of the things. You just keep doing it, you know, you just keep trying.
Yep. And you mentioned that most of your injuries have come from judo. I can attest to that as well, from getting beaten up by judo players. I can understand where most of that comes from. You know, what are you sort of seeing for yourself personally, the people that you're training with, in terms of, like, sort of common injuries? Where are you seeing them? What sort of stuff are you noticing?
In terms of the most common, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, lower backs, knees. Obviously, the obvious cauliflower ears, jammed fingers, you know, arthritic thumbs, that sort of thing.
Yep.
It's shoulders as well. So, you know, shoulders take a lot of beating as well. I think just it's a wide open sport. I suppose most combat sports, you could talk about most grappling sports, are wide open. And I think the injury potential is massive. But I think the common ones are like your back, your knees. You know, fingers and shoulders, really, I would guess. That's I mean, from experience, but also from, like, experience of other people, the training partners and stuff, because I find it takes me longer to tape up now than it does to warm up. You know,
I could say that. I'm just going to say that for sure.
Is there any tape sponsors out there at the minute?
Yes. I have a tape sponsor. You can go to fingertape.com.au and you can check them out. So I'll send them your way. I'll send them your details. They make the premium stuff, mate. So they're good to go. There you go, finger tape. Now, like I said, now I know you. I know of you from strength and conditioning, reading your articles, following your stuff. And like I said, early in my getting into, because when I started, you know, when I was started fighting, strength and conditioning was essentially your coach would get you to go do road work. You do push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups, and that was strength and conditioning, and that's all I really knew. And so then seeing your article sort of made me realize there was more to it, there was more specific things I should be doing. How did you get involved in the strength and conditioning side?
a sports science course, a university degree course in Sunderland in my hometown. And I got into it through that, really. I just became interested in kind of how to become fitter. Because I'm not, to me, I'm not really, I'm all right skills-wise. But the thing that used to carry me through was kind of my fitness and my endurance. And I think, you know, if technical a bit, because I've been trounced by some really great players, I've been battered by some great players. But if technique's kind of equal, we've heard it before that the stronger, fitter fighter will win. Do you know what I mean? And I always thought, well, that's something I can, as well as drilling techniques and stuff and trying to make myself technically better, I can also hedge my bets by becoming stronger and fitter and being the fittest I can possibly be. And I always tried to instill that with myself. And when I was running sessions at Grapple Fit and I was running the gym regularly, it was one of those things where I used to try and say to the fighters, this is the key thing is, you know, you want to step on the mat or get in that cage or get in that boxing ring and know that there's nothing else you could have done to be fitter. And then, at least, you know, because the last thing you want to think is, I should have done a few more hill sprints. as you're walking onto the mat, it's like, I think for me, I was always interested and fascinated in how people got to certain fitness levels and where you could push yourself, you know?
And look, and when I found your stuff, it probably came to me at a formative time anyway. I'd had a career change as well. I joined the army and then so my training for fighting, essentially, I was on my own. I was away from my home gym and I was essentially just sort of punching the bag and trying to find sparring wherever I could. And that's something that I took from that as well, that I went, oh, well, I can be fit. I can be really fit and I can be really strong. And that way, at least I may not have got the sparring in and I may not have got the pads in, but my fitness will be good. My conditioning will be good. So that's definitely something that I've been able to take from that sort of stuff as well. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like, everyone has holes in their game. Everyone has weaknesses and stuff. But I think I used to be quite dogmatic about it. I think it's inexcusable for a fighter to lose a fight on conditioning, if that makes sense. Yep. I know it sounds a little bit kind of militant, but if you've done everything else that you can think of, but you get caught in a sub or you get thrown or you get knocked out in the first minute, then it happens. You can't train for that. But if you gas halfway through, then, you know, you need to be asking questions about your prep and stuff, I think, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, that's a very sweeping statement, but there's probably somebody will shoot us down in flames for that. But ultimately, I know factors like weight cut and things have a bearing, but ultimately, you know, you've got to take care of the things that you can, if you manage what you can handle and what you can tweak and adapt, then I think everything else falls into place.
No, I agree with that. And I've definitely tried to apply that to my training and anyone that I'm talking to as well. I try and get that across as well. Like you're saying, there's no real reason. I'm aware of the competitive conditions in terms of the surface, the area, the times, the rest breaks, whatever it is. There's no real reason I can't train as specifically and be as strong and as fit as possible for that. I agree wholeheartedly with that. One of the things I wanted to ask you about in terms of organizing, so strength and conditioning, for athletes, you've worked with UFC fighters, you've worked with Ross Pearson, you've worked with those high level guys. What is the training sort of difference between working with a Sambo practitioner or a judoka or someone like that and then, or working with an MMA guy? How much is that going to differ?
Well, I used to coach some of the judo, like the master athletes, the veteran guys. I mean, a couple of them were early 60s at the time, and they were still smashing it in the gym and on the mat and stuff. And obviously, they compete in age classes, but they were elite athletes all day. I trained a handful of boxers too, and I think when you're dealing with someone who follows like a single discipline, if you like, in terms of, because MMA is multifaceted, isn't it? You've got different things to train. So I would look at, for an MMA fighter, I would look at their programming and think like, okay, so one day they might have boxing, the next day it might be jits, the next day it might be wrestling, the next day it might be scramble drills, and all of that's wearing on the nervous system. So I used to try and, like, my role as a strength and conditioning coach was always to make them better, not worse, you know. And you used to see people stand, you know, any idiot can stand with a clipboard and a whistle and just shout, you know, I could make you run till you're sick. It's like,
yeah,
but is it helping? So yeah, along with kind of training them sensibly, well, training them hard, I used to try and train them sensibly and smart, because it's very difficult to balance them. Like with Ross particularly, you mentioned Ross. Ross was the ideal client. I could put a workout on the whiteboard and I could go, you know, you and I could go and grab a cup of coffee while he was training, and I know he would do the workout and probably and then some. But that's not what it's about. It's about doing what you need to do rather than what you fancy doing, you know, whether you feel good or bad. You know, listen to your body and looking at, like, for an MMA fighter, looking at the rest of their training week, the rest of their training cycle, where for boxers, they would hit pads and they would spar.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't want to call it one dimensional, but there's one aspect to it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, do you know what I mean? Where in MMA, they've got to train different things. So they might be doing something, they might just be doing like a floor roll rounds, you know, some jits on the floor, rolling nice and steady. Then the next day, they could be wrestling hard or they could be MMA sparring, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that has an impact on the nervous system, where all training does. So you've got to take that into account. That was the only real major difference, but it did make a difference if you, you know, from between making them better and enhancing their combat sport performance, or making them worse and running them into the ground.
That's something that I've heard from other coaches recently as well. Especially, I spoke to Casey Halstead yesterday, and he's a 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu instructor.
Owns
and operates a bunch of gyms in the States, and he was saying the same sort of thing. You know, like, I need to make sure that I'm tying in with the other gyms. You know, I'm the grappling instructor. I need to tie in with the strength and conditioning coach. I need to tie in with the striking coach, because everyone wants to be the guy that runs them into the ground. You know, I did the smash session, but the other coach is thinking that too. I know that when they go to the next coach, you know, are they going to think that too? So yeah, that's definitely got to be one of the harder parts about having, I guess, those detached elements. Whereas training, like, I come from a striking background, so I can totally understand the boxer comparison. I go see my boxing coach, and that's my boxing coach, and I know exactly what sessions I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's much easier there. But like you're saying, you know, I go see my wrestling coach one day, and then the next day I've got my Muay Thai coach, and then I've got jiu-jitsu in the afternoon, and I'm seeing you in between sessions. It becomes hard, for sure.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I've seen many, many people burn out doing that, and it's, you know, for me, I always think it's hard. And I suppose we all do it. Anyone that competes, we've done it before ourselves. You don't listen to your body the way you should.
No.
And it's only as you get older that you start to realize, I should have paid more attention and rested a little bit. I mean, I had this conversation with someone the other day, and we were talking about, like, how combat sports have an impact on your body. And this guy's still competing and doing charity events for kickboxing. He's a local guy to me, Paul Greaves, lovely, lovely lad. And he's 50. And he's still going mad with his training and stuff. But we were talking about how, like, in your youth, you warm up kind of, you know, it's a little bit with a few head circles, few shoulder rotations, and then bang into it. And I used to kind of insist on, like, the younger guys coming in, look, warm up, foam roll, do the whole bit, make it a habit, because you will be grateful in your 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know what I mean? And it's hard to say that to people, you know, because they go, oh yeah, just get stuck into it. No, you know, listen.
it's hard to, especially dealing with fighters, the mindset's going to be different. They're going to want to go a million miles an hour at all times. And,
without a
doubt, you know, talking to a guy, I've spoken to a couple of, like, yoga instructors and, body movement specialists and stuff in the last couple of weeks. And one of the things they've said when they're working with fighters, they're like, the hardest part is not getting them to do the work. The hardest part is getting them to slow down and
do the little
parts. It's like, it's okay to not go a million miles an hour. Elliot Compton had a really, world champion Muay Thai fighter from Australia. Spoke to him the other week, and he said something similar about his strength and conditioning. Shout out Elliot, awesome guy. But he was talking about how his strength and conditioning coach is really clued up with that. And he'll say, it's not about what you can do. It's about what you can recover from as well.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the next day he's going to go in and be firing on all cylinders for pads or sparring or whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah.
No point breaking yourself because you didn't take the time to foam roll. You didn't activate, you didn't stretch. I'm bad for it still. I'm shocking for it. yeah. Coaches in the past have got at me about it. And I'm sure that in the next couple of years, I can already feel it now. And I know that in the next couple of years, I'm going to be saying, probably should have done that a bit more. Probably should have stretched a bit more. Yeah, I know. I'm bad for it. In terms of like specific exercises, then is there anything you're going to change? Cause I know that yourself as a Sambo practitioner, I see you do loads of grip work, obviously lots of gi specific work as well.
Yeah.
How much of that's going to translate, do you think? Are you going to get the MMA guys doing any of that?
No, well, I mean, I don't train people now. Grapple Fit as a physical gym folded 2 years ago. So I kind of consult with people and stuff now and
yep.
do little bits of like linking in with, because I still have the connections with a lot of the fighters and stuff. And
yeah,
and if you want help, I'll give them help and stuff. But obviously, when I was running the gym as an entity itself, I used to get them doing a lot of gi grip, and I used to get them doing fat grip stuff, and I used to anything in between. And I think, you know, it's like any, you know, you train everything through a full range of movement, so your grip was no kind of different. Even strikers, even boxers, because obviously, you know, the muscles of the hand can strengthen the hand against boxers' fractures, you know.
Yeah.
So I used to sell it to them on that basis. I think grip training is important, whatever your discipline, really. So it is good. It's obviously been a passion of mine anyway. I mean, I got into grip feats and stuff about 10 or 12 years ago. I prolapsed two discs in my spine, and I was out of training. I was off at the time. I was working as a college lecturer. I was off work for 5 months, and I was out of training properly for 10 months. So once I started feeling better, I started dabbling with like daft feats of strength, like bending nails and decks of cards and whatnot, you know. And it was
yep.
it was just for the crack, really, just for the frisk and stuff. But I got into that, and it was more. It started to carry over, to be honest. It started to carry over to certain things, even grappling in like no gi situations. I haven't done much of that, but I found that like I could transfer my grip strength.
To risk control, all that.
Yeah. And it was a bit of an eye opener at the time, and it's just something I've carried on with. I think it's massively important, but it's the same as if you look at. I mean, everybody kind of they're not so much now, but when I first started, and probably the time you were reading my articles in as a cure for insomnia, reading my articles in Fighters Only. People were still doing the big thing of, like, as you said yourself, distance running,
yeah.
and training like bodybuilders and stuff. Where now that's all changed. It's the focus is shifting, but people still have weak links like necks. You know, the neck, the grip. You know, the posterior chain's neglected a little bit, I think, still. And you become a product of your sport and how you train. So
yep.
you know, I think sometimes it needs to develop a little bit further, but. Over the last kind of, I suppose, 20 years, combat sports strength and conditioning has come on massively. There's been lots of changes.
Yeah.
So I think sure. that's the important bit. People neglect those bits, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, up until, you know, when those articles were coming out and I was reading them, and like I said, I've kept them for those reasons, because it's always good for me to go back to and say, you know, you know, someone asks me, oh, what should I be doing for this? And I rehash and I go, oh, I remember something. Hold on, let me get that folder out. And I'll go back through the folder and build a circuit from that sort of thing. Looking at,
yeah.
you know, like, you know, gi grip specific stuff. When I got back into gi, you know, like training in the gi, I took some time off training in the gi. And when I got back to it, that was one of the big things. I said, oh, I can get those out and do the uchikomi drills with the gi grips and
yeah.
all that. So it was good to be able to get back to that sort of stuff. So,
I'm glad that you saw me. I'm glad you used me.
I was good. Like I said, I was really happy to be able to have this chat. That was good because I've had those articles in those folders on the shelf for a long time now. So it has been really cool.
No, thank you, mate. It's been thank you for
welcome.
Having me on.
No, you're welcome. Oh, I want to stay on for another minute because I know that you've got a competition coming up. You've got the World Sambo Worlds coming up, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. I've got the President's Cup at the end of September. That's in Northern Ireland. And then I've got the World Masters in October in Morocco.
Beautiful. So what's your training look like for that then? What are you...
Well, again, like I mentioned earlier about my back injury and stuff, I'm focusing more on like power-based stuff and conditioning. I'm avoiding any major kind of vertical loading through my spine and stuff. I do squat and things, and I trap bar deadlift, but I don't kind of do much on a straight bar now. I don't back squat as much now, and I definitely don't go heavy. I'm 44 this year, but I think my skeleton's probably 106. So, odd years are kind of ages quicker, I think. I'm just trying to be more sensible. But do you know the basic thing, I think, is it's like a lot of the methods that come along are always great. And I do suffer from a bit of shiny object syndrome. And I look at like, oh, that looks good. I'll try that. But what I find is basics done well just trumps everything else. So yeah. I'll squat, I'll lift, I'll push, I'll pull. I do a lot of sled pulls and sled pushes. And I try and sprint. I mean, you probably saw my latest video where I was sprinting with my eldest son. And
yeah.
I always feel like I have a running gait like Usain Bolt, but I clearly don't on video. I just look like my hips are connected to my upper body. It's like, and I don't know what that is, but I always feel like I'm going really fast, and I'm just not.
Video's cruel like that. I do the same. I watch my training back. I'll watch pads back or something like that. I'll be like, oh, I was moving well. I was moving fast. And I'll watch it back and go, that's not as fast. Okay.
Yeah, definitely keeps you grounded. Watching yourself on video definitely keeps you grounded.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. Wow. I remember fights differently. I watch a fight back and I go, oh, no, that combo was much better in my head. That landed really well.
Yeah,
that looks messy. Oh, okay. Absolutely.
I mean, the majority of my training, as you said yourself, you saw, like, I do a lot of gi grip and stuff, because the grip fighting is the hard bit, in sports sambo, particularly. Obviously, there's very little grip fighting in combat sambo because your striking leads into your fighting as such, but that leads into your clinches and your throws, where the sports sambo aspect, the grip fighting's hard, and they don't have the same restrictions that judo do now. So you can strip grips off, and so I'm doing a lot of like explosive work on like gi bands. I'm doing a lot of maximal strength work, and it's torturous on your fingers, as you'll know yourself from the jits and stuff. It's torturous on your fingers, but you've got to get used to that kind of. That callousing of your joints and the swelling of your knuckles and stuff just to allow you to cope with the stress. So it's mainly power endurance, I suppose, is where my training's going. But I don't like, years and years ago, I used to like using kettlebells, for instance, or sandbags and stuff. But I found that, like, it doesn't matter what you use, as long as you train and as long as you're hitting, you know, strength, power and power endurance, in terms of like sprinting capacity and stuff like that, I always find I've done well personally, and the people I used to train did well on following that kind of methodology, really, you know. And it was, I'm very much of the less is more now as well. I don't cane myself as much as I used to, you know. I don't like batter away at stuff. I'm saying that I sometimes do, you know, and then I catch myself the next morning. You know, when I'm like the evolution of man and I'm trying to get out of bed and it's straighten up, you know, I'm just, it's one of those where I kind of think, you know, maybe I should have took it easier yesterday, but because I get excited, I get carried away. but it's one of those things where it's hard not to. And I think, you know, but you've got to be sensible. And like I said earlier, do what needs to be done rather than what you fancy doing, you know.
Absolutely. I agree. That's all been fantastic stuff. All right. I'm going to wrap up. I've got to get back to work. I'm in my work year now. I've got to go back into the office. I've got to make sure the place hasn't burnt down. Before we go, please, if you've got any, I know you've got some sponsors. If you want to give them a plug, give them a plug, and I'll link them in as well. So, give them a shout.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right. Just a big thanks to New Level Gym. Luke Kennedy at New Level Gym. That's where I train and do all the crazy stuff. Big thanks to Lean Eaton for my nutrition, Tough Gorilla for t-shirts, also Grapido Trainer. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I've also got Netflix Official. They've just come on recently as a sponsor. And I do have somebody else as well. This is awful, and I forgot.
That's all right. It's okay because
I'll link them in.
we'll get their details and we'll post them up and it'll all be all right. It'll be fine.
Yeah. All right.
And I will send finger tape your way and we'll get your joints taken care of. I'll give them a quick yell and we'll look after your digits. All right, guys, thank you for tuning in. Like I said earlier, go to dirtycleaneats.com and go to fingertape.com.au. Use my codes and get some product. Do yourself right. All right. Thank you, Barry. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thanks, buddy. Bye.